Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrivia Sotalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I am one of your hosts, Joe.
And I'm Cassie.
And this week we are going to be talking about Chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, The Rogue Bludger.
We are. And we said in the last episode, I said in the last episode that I liked the chapter. And Joe said, you say that for every chapter. And I'm not going to say it for this chapter because I only feel medium good about this chapter.
Medium good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of like the chapter.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's like a lot of stuff happens, but also not a lot happens, if that makes sense.
It's focused on sports and you hate sports.
That's probably part of it.
Yeah. I didn't think it was a bad chapter, but
it's not a bad chapter.
Definitely wouldn't say it's my favorite.
No. It's just like a, we're going to move the plot forward chapter.
Yeah.
And think of kind of contrived ways to do it. Anyway.
We're just brushing right over that. Cassie, it is your turn to do the chapter summary.
It is. I have it ready. Every time I try to open the clock app on my phone, I hit calculator. And I think part of it is that they both start with C. And so I'm like, yeah, C, numbers.
One of them is a picture of a clock and one of them is a picture of a calculator.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Ready?
Yep. Hermione manages to sweet talk Lockhart into signing a note for her to get the potions book out of the restricted section, and the kids make an ingredient list for the polyjuice potion. Harry's anxious for the Quidditch match with the Slytherins because they have fast brooms. While playing, Bludger is fixed on Harry and eventually breaks his arm, but he manages to catch the snitch anyway. On the ground, Lockhart fubs the spell to fix Harry's arm and instead removes all the bones in it. In the hospital wing, Dobby appears and reveals to Harry that he sealed the platform and cursed the Bludger in an attempt to keep Harry safe from the dangers at school related to the Chamber of Secrets. Harry sees Dumbledore bring in
Time.
A
hedge...
Darn. I pretty much got there.
Okay. You don't get to finish.
I know. A lot happens in this chapter, but also, like, not a lot happens in this chapter. And also, I realized that I literally wrote the sentence, Harry is anxious for the Quidditch match with the Slytherins because they have fast brooms.
Yeah, I mean, that is correct. I'm sorry, did you type that up and print it out?
Well... So it takes me so long to handwrite the notes, and my wrists have been hurting a lot because we've been in the house for weeks and I've been typing so much.
So you chose to type more.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I can type so much faster than I write. So I typed it all up. I'm like, wow, that was faster. And then I'm like, but I can't look at my computer screen during the podcast.
I mean, you totally could.
But then I couldn't look at you.
I'm very nice to look at.
Wouldn't that be weird, though, to have a conversation... Well, I was about to say, wouldn't it be weird to have a conversation while I stare at my computer screen and you look at me? But we kind of already do that all the time.
Our computers are back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not we don't exactly. Face each other.
Yeah. But no, that would be weird. But yes, I typed and printed my notes this time.
I do have to say typed, printed, and stapled.
What if I got the pages mixed up?
I mean, you're the amateur that didn't number the pages.
They are numbered.
So how on earth, whatever makes you happy.
It doesn't make me happy. It's just my hands hurt so much. Welcome to Podtrivia Sotalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. Let's talk about the Wagga Wagga werewolf. I've been so excited to say that this past hour.
The Wagga Wagga werewolf is one of many stories that Lockhart reenacts.
Say it again.
Wagga Wagga werewolf. So Lockhart, after the pixie incident, stops bringing in live creatures. So after the very first day, he says, never mind, we're not doing anything with live creatures. And then he's reading from his book or reenacting scenes. And the Wagga Wagga werewolf is one of those scenes. Harry is constantly volunteered by Lockhart to be the villain in the scenes. In this one, as the Wagga Wagga werewolf, Harry is, and I highlight specifically, slammed to the floor and forced to make a piteous moan.
I'm real tickled by the Wagga Wagga werewolf. It's very funny.
So is Wagga Wagga supposed to be the village?
I don't know.
I don't understand how many like disconnected villages there are, because Lockhart seems to be saving a lot of them. Like,
oh yeah. Like, I mean, there are villages all over the world, Joe.
There are villages all over the world, but is he revealing that he's a wizard to muggles, or is he helping wizard villages that can't fend for themselves?
I don't know. I don't know that his books would stand up to scrutiny.
It just seems like he happens to be coming across a lot of
people
like,
in distress.
Well, I mean, obviously that's the plot of the books, but just like a lot of villages, like uneducated villages, or I'm trying to find the right words to say this.
Like primitive villages? Is that what you're looking for?
I guess.
I don't know. Truly, I don't. It is odd that he has the level of coincidence it requires for one person to have all of these experiences is kind of wild. Like, even if you are traveling the world, that you would have encountered all of these different magical creatures. Again, it feels unbelievable, and it's supposed to.
Well, I mean, he was, and we find out at this point in the book, he was offered a position as a seeker for a national Quidditch team, but he turned it down so he could travel the world and save it from dark beasts.
Yeah.
You know, so someone with that kind of skill really would find all of these magical creatures in villages that conveniently have the same sounding beginning. So he can use onomatopoeia.
Sure. Alliteration.
Alliteration.
Onomatopoeia is a different
boom.
Thing.
Boom.
Yep. There you go. thanks, public education. But back to the Wagga Wagga werewolf, the true star of this chapter. Lockhart describes using the homorphous
maybe that
charm.
Is onomatopoeia. Maybe Wagga Wagga is the sound the werewolf makes
it's
when
not,
it walks.
That's not how it works. The homorphous charm. Now, breaking the Latin down for this is not that interesting. Homorphous, human, morph, change. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. But he uses it to change the Wagga Wagga werewolf back into a human, seemingly permanently, because he says, like, and it was never a problem for the village ever again.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting little detail, because we do learn about werewolves in the universe in later books, and this does not track at all with how werewolves are portrayed later on.
Yeah. We can't really get into it, but there's not a cure?
Not really, no. And I'm not super informed about, like, werewolf legendarium and stuff, but I don't think in any of it that there is a cure for being a werewolf.
I'm sure there's some version.
I'm sure there's a version where the werewolves sparkle in the sunlight and eat deer instead of humans, sure. But needless to say, Defense Against the Dark Arts has turned into a joke for these kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he is reading aloud from his books and or reenacting them. And that is not an effective way to teach kids how to use defensive magic.
But I have had professors that will just read aloud from their books that they wrote. Mm-hmm. So,
but did they reenact them?
Unfortunately, no. I
so
would
Lockhart's
love to see
that.
My economics professor. My economics professor. I would love to see my economics professor reenact all the like
Keynesian economics.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a interesting interpretive dance. But as we saw in the previous chapter, Harry, Ron, and Hermione have devised this plan to get a signature from Lockhart to get a book out of the restricted section.
So they devise this plan after, like, the last thing that they say is, we'd have to find a teacher who's very thick.
Yeah.
And clearly they all decide that's Lockhart. But then Hermione continues to defend him.
I think that that was more a dialogue between Ron and Harry. I think Hermione approaches this as, I don't think Hermione's stupid. I think she knows that Lockhart is vain. And I think that she knows that she can butter him up and still kind of enjoy that attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she's able to exist within both camps, even if they are seemingly contradictory.
So you're saying that she's, I mean, clearly she doesn't think that he's thick at this point.
No.
But you're saying she decided to go with Lockhart because she could butter him up.
Yeah, I think she knows that he'd be easy to get one
he's
by.
He's an easy target.
Because, like, look at their other options. McGonagall?
No. No.
Snape? No. Flitwick? Maybe, but he's, like, barely in the book.
No.
So, no. So, like, Lockhart is the easiest option that they've got.
Yeah.
But you're right. Ron calls Lockhart a brainless git, and Hermione corrects him, and she does so shrilly. I am real upset about this. I don't like the word shrill. I don't like when it's used to describe women. And it seems weird for Rowling to use it to describe Hermione. Not to say that Rowling is never critical of Hermione or can't be critical of Hermione, but I don't know. Shrill is such a coded word.
The word's not great, but I kind of read it as like a, her voice got high pitches. She got defensive. I feel like a lot of people will kind of went back into a corner in a conversation, like their voice gets a little higher. So like, you know, it's not really what you think.
Are you trying to say something about me?
No. Do you do that?
I don't know. I don't listen to myself that often.
I don't think I've heard your voice do that.
Okay.
Also, it's very hard to talk you into a corner. So
that's true. I like to yap, which is how I got you to start a podcast with me. But yeah, they basically trick him into signing the piece of paper. And
with very little effort.
Yeah.
And he doesn't look at the paper.
He's very excited to sign something, really.
He takes out his autograph pen.
Quill.
His autograph quill, which is a peacock feather.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And brags about the peacock feather as well.
Yeah, it shrilly really stood out to me. I understand how you're saying that it's used. It's just it has a lot of other connotations associated with it, and they're not very pleasant. But they do take the note to the library and give it to Madame Pince. And Madame Pince is said to look like an underfed vulture, which is just a really vivid and vicious simile to describe a person.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I like the idea of Hermione has to give this note over and is refusing to give over the note, which from Pins's perspective, like that seems suspicious. So I can see why she's like checking it so thoroughly.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Of like, well, here's this note saying we can get a book from the restricted section. You can't keep. I want to keep it.
Yeah.
You shouldn't hold on to this. I want to hold on to this.
Yeah. Hermione, of course, just wants Lockhart's autograph.
Yes.
But like, I feel like she could just ask for it and she'd get one.
And also their homework was to write a poem about his fight with the Waka Waka werewolf.
Wagga Wagga werewolf.
Wagga Wagga werewolf. I'm sorry, that's Pac-Man Waka Waka.
Is it?
That's the sound Pac-Man makes.
No, but Waka Waka, that's something else.
I'm sure.
It's a Shakira song.
Waka Waka?
Waka Waka, this time for Africa. What?
Oh, I forgot about that song.
Wait.
Rightfully so.
How do you know about this and I don't? Me, the world's biggest Shakira fan. This is the official song of the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah. I think it might have been that year's FIFA World Cup, something
like 2010.
That. 2010. Yeah.
There's soccer happening.
Yeah, that's what FIFA is.
Did Africa win the FIFA World Cup or something?
I thought they were the host.
Okay.
Which is like, I don't think the whole country was the host. The whole continent was the host. Like,
does
what country was it in?
Like, do the individual African countries have a soccer team or is it just like the UK versus Africa?
I don't know. I don't follow soccer.
Okay. That is not a good Shakira song. And like every Shakira song is good, but I don't care for that one.
There's a reason you forgot about it.
I don't know that I ever knew about it. anyway, the Wagga Wagga werewolf. What were we talking about? The note. Okay.
So Hermione was gripping onto this note to try and hold on to his autograph, but she probably would have gotten his autograph on the book she was about to win for doing well on his homework.
Hermione's not that conceited that she would assume that she would win.
No, but the idea that that's the reward for writing a poem about his book is very good of like,
yes,
now here's a signed version of that book. I'm going to sign it for you. And also there's a good chance he's doing that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it doesn't make sense for Hermione to want to keep the note, but 12-year-old girls with crushes don't typically make sense.
This is also like he signed this note while calling her like the brightest
student or something. Yeah. 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 Poor Hermione. But they get the book out of the library after a lot of scrutiny from Madam Pins, and they take it to the bathroom because nobody will see them in there. Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, I should say. And talk about the ingredients for the polyjuice potion, which I do want to talk a little bit about because Rowling actually commented directly on how she came up with the ingredients for the potion. And I thought that was interesting. So I'm going to read the little bit that she said. I remember creating the full list of ingredients for the polyjuice potion. Each one was carefully selected. Lacewing flies, the first part of the name suggested an intertwining or binding together of two identities. Leeches, to suck the essence out of one and into the other. Horn of a bicorn, the idea of duality. Knot grass, another hint of being tied to another person. Flux weed, the mutability of the body as it changes into another. And boomslang skin, a shedded outer body and a new inner. I thought that was interesting. I am not a botanist, so I was not familiar with knot grass outside of this context. I don't still fully understand how it suggests being tied to another person. Oh, a knot.
A knot.
Oh, lordy.
Are all of these real things or are some of them made up?
Leeches are definitely real.
Yes, leeches are real. Lacewing flies are real.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say a bicorn is not real.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
That's a unicorn with two horns.
Yeah.
Which is a horse with antlers.
Which is a deer.
But big.
Okay. But back to knotgrass, I have a little bit more to talk about with it. I did a little research on it to, because I'm an idiot, apparently, to figure out how it suggests being tied to a person. And I did not find anything satisfying about that. But I did find a note on Wikipedia that said that Victor Hugo refers to knotgrass as being used to mutilate children in his novel The Man Who Laughs. And Shakespeare also refers to it in A Midsummer Night's Dream, which this is, I think, the second time we've talked about A Midsummer Night's Dream for this book. Lysander says to Hermia, "Get you gone, you dwarf, you minimus of hindering knot grass made, you bead, you acorn." And I think I'm going to start calling people acorns now.
In a derogatory way?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Lysander is not happy with Hermia.
I can tell, but I feel like calling somebody an acorn will only be a positive thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Lysander clearly doesn't think so.
I think it has to be in a string of insults along with it.
Okay. That's fair. He was also tripping on that fairy dust in this scene, so. That's all I had to say about knot grass. I missed the mark on that one.
Really would have solved you some Googling. Would have saved you some Googling.
But it's always good for me to familiarize myself with Shakespeare as somebody with 2 degrees in English.
So after they go through the list, they talk about procuring all of these things. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of stuff that is available in the student closet.
Student's cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Get it right.
I'm so sorry. Which I guess the students just have access to a bunch of.
I kind of took that as like when they're in potions class, they have to go get their ingredients out of a cabinet. And so I think they're just saying like we can swipe it during potions class when we're getting our regular ingredients.
That makes sense. That makes a lot more sense.
Than just like an open cabinet with like potions ingredients for them to just take.
Yeah.
I mean, also like if they're practicing. They probably
it would have
shouldn't.
To be some really non-consequential stuff.
Yeah.
But still.
But some of it is going to be hard to find for them.
Yes. They talk about breaking into Snape's office. And also that one of the things they have to make is going to take 21 days. They're going to brew it in for 21 days.
It has to be harvested on a full moon and then brewed, I think, for 21 days.
No, those are two separate things. The flux weed has to be picked during the full moon, and lace wings have to be stewed for 21 days. So they're probably going to start the lace wings as soon as they get them.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever the next full moon is, they can pick the flux weed.
Yeah. So it's a process, and Harry and Ron are not enthused about it. They're like, Malfoy could have attacked half the school by then. And Harry and Ron also bring up that they're going to be breaking a bunch of rules, both in procuring these ingredients and brewing the potion and impersonating Slytherins. And Hermione stands up to them by saying that, like, it's worth it to break the rules. And she says, I think threatening Muggleborns is far worse than brewing up a difficult potion. But if you don't want to find out if it's Malfoy, I'll go straight to Madame Pince now and hand the book back in. And I think this is a good scene because it confirms that Hermione has a personal stake in this.
Mm-hmm.
In being a Muggleborn student and being kind of targeted by Malfoy, because until now we haven't really seen her emotionally react to the prejudice that's going on at the school right now.
I mean, we could infer that that was part of the reason she was diving into this so deep right away.
Yeah.
But now she's explicitly saying, yeah.
Right. And I also think that it's just a good scene for showing Hermione's sense of justice. I think we talked about it last episode, but Hermione is willing to break the rules when she feels it is a just cause.
Yeah.
And part of that, I think part of her character arc is realizing that the rules and authority aren't always right. That sometimes you need to step outside of them and do what you personally know is right in order to achieve justice and good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I like that for her. Good for her for standing up to Harry and Ron complaining. And all, like, also, let's be real, Hermione's going to do basically all the work here. They're not going to have much of a hand in brewing this potion.
Very likely, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll try, but...
They'll help her get the ingredients, but Hermione's the one putting in the work here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they got to make this plan. They realize it's going to take a while, and Quidditch is the next day, I guess.
Yeah. As they leave the bathroom, after they found out, oh, it's going to take a full month for this to happen, Ron suggests just knocking Malfoy off his broom.
Yeah.
And I guess killing him?
I think somebody would step in. I think there are probably, like, magical enchantments to prevent.
But, I mean, if there's a magical enchantment... And Malfoy's fine. Knocking him off the broom is not going to help the situation.
I think Ron was mostly kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. but also not really. Because Ron is ride or die all the way.
Maybe not kill him. Maybe, like, seriously injure him.
Just take him out of the competition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take him out of the picture.
Yeah. Which, speaking of, this Quidditch match, everybody's getting real gassed up for it. Because, like, this is... Gryffindor versus Slytherin, and everybody hates Slytherin, so even the Hufflepuffs and the Ravenclaws are, like, dying to see Slytherin beat. But Slytherin, they've got them fast brooms.
Yeah, they have very fast brooms. The Gryffindor team is very worried about it. Harry wakes up early so that he can spend time laying in bed in pain.
Yeah,
from
can
nerves
relate. yep.
And
my boyfriend Oliver Wood says, get to the snitch before Malfoy or die trying, Harry, because we've got to win today. We've got to. And you know he means this.
Yes. And Harry takes it to heart.
Does he?
Absolutely. We get into the game and a bludger starts attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know how much of the game, but Slytherin scores 60 points. That's six scores, because it's 10 points apiece, I believe,
mm-hmm.
while Fred and George are on either side of Harry, knocking this bludger back, which is singling him out, which is not how bludgers are supposed to work. He specifically, I guess he thinks, because it's not...
Harry tells us that, like, bludgers are supposed to knock as many people around as possible.
Yes, and that's clearly not what's happening. Fred and George are... hitting it away and at other people, and the bludger is
just turning
and going straight back at Harry. It's doing whatever it can to get him.
Mm-hmm.
So the twins call a timeout.
A little bit before that, I just want to mention, Malfoy calls Harry
Scarhead.
Yeah, which is just a gross way of making fun of him for A, like, physical dismemberment, and B, having dead parents again. It's not good. But yeah, they call their little timeout to discuss what to do about the Bludger, because they believe they cannot play this way, that Fred and George need to help protect the other players on the Gryffindor team. They mentioned that one of the chasers, I don't remember who, was about to score, but then got hit
Angelina.
By
Angelina.
Okay, but then got hit by a Bludger, and Fred and George were just nowhere to be found because they were trying to protect Harry. And Harry is like, I can't play with you guys right next to me either. I need to be able to be fast and nimble, and I'm never going to be able to catch the Snitch if you're, you know, swarming me like this.
Yeah, he's feeling crowded and he's saying, oh, I'm only going to catch it if it goes up my sleeve.
Yeah, which is par for the course for Harry.
Yeah, he's one has just gotten into his mouth and
yeah,
whatever else. It wouldn't be out of the question for it to just fly up his sleeve.
But I have a problem with their little conversation at the timeout, because they're presenting two possibilities. Either they continue playing like this, Fred and George go and play their regular positions and let Harry be and let him deal with the Bludger himself and try to catch the Snitch, or they discuss reporting it, saying that like the Slytherins tampered with it to try to eliminate Harry and we have to report this. But for some reason they don't seem to want to do that, because Harry says that that will mean that they're forfeiting the match.
They would have to stop to make the inquiry. They'd have to stop the game to make the inquiry.
Why would that
and
be
they
forfeiting?
Say it's forfeiting. I don't know.
And like,
those are just the convoluted rules of Quidditch.
And like, is Madame Hooch not seeing what's happening here?
She must be. She clearly is. But
why? Like, why is nobody stepping in?
According to Oliver, the Quidditch balls have been locked up with Madame Hooch since Gryffindor played with
sure.
them last. Practice with them last. So there's no way that Slytherin could have done anything to them.
So you're saying
Madame Hooch is like, well, this is odd, but how
would somebody get to it?
How is this possible?
And so maybe they're seeing it as a forfeit, because if they were the last people to use them, someone could make the argument, I imagine, that the Gryffindors cursed the Bludger to go after Harry to try to get the Slytherins in trouble and maybe eliminated, because they knew they couldn't beat them.
That's definitely an argument, but I feel like there's probably just a lot of convoluted rules in Quidditch to help the plot.
Yeah, this is kind of what doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And I know I talked about last episode how people say all the time, like, why don't they just tell an adult? But in this situation, it really feels like, A, the adults should be paying attention already. And
the adults are watching.
Yeah.
And
like, everybody
stands.
Is here to watch the Quidditch game. Is
yeah.
nobody paying attention? But yeah, this feels like there is another solution here.
There should be, but they've already addressed it. It's not like they're just ignoring the fact that, oh, that's not how the Bludger should act. Well, whatever, let's keep playing. It's, we don't really have much of a choice.
I think they
do
have a choice.
Harry's the one that's saying, just
yeah.
let me do this. And Fred and George are saying, no, you will get seriously hurt.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to do that.
And he does get seriously hurt.
He does get seriously hurt. But George does say, this is all your fault to Oliver Wood. Mm-hmm. Get the Snitch or die trying.
Yeah. And it's not wrong.
Yeah.
And I do think part of it is just Harry being hot-headed and being goaded by Malfoy. I think that even without Wood's influence, Harry would be like, no, I'm going to keep playing. I'll deal with it. I'll put myself in harm's way because we have to win. But I think he's definitely pushed by Wood in that direction.
He is very much pushed by Wood in that direction. But the fact that Malfoy right now is his adversary
yeah.
is definitely a big part of it.
And I think part of it too is that Harry wants to, at least at this point in the books, Harry wants to please other Gryffindors and please his team and maybe feel like he has earned some of the praise that he gets, if that makes sense. Like, he's known for being famous Harry Potter who defeated Lord Voldemort, but I think there's a part of Harry that wants to be known for things that he like actually worked for and did.
I mean, he's been practicing every day for weeks.
Right.
He's working very hard at this. And yeah, that's something he wanted in the last book too. And he, time and time again on the Quidditch field, showed that he was good enough for the challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
So he just wants to keep that up. He does care about this team.
Right. I think it is loyalty to Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Partly that keeps him going. It ends kind of okay.
So Harry sees the Snitch finally when it is hovering over Malfoy's head mm-hmm. while Malfoy is laughing at him, because everyone is laughing at him. He's being chased by a bludger, which, yes, the bludgers are meant to try and knock people off brooms, but this thing is relentlessly chasing him. And it probably looks hilarious. They talk about how he is dodging in weird ways. He's making little spins. He's upside down a lot. And he's like doing all this in the pouring rain. So, yes, everyone's laughing at him. And Malfoy, who was supposed to be looking for the snitch, is so distracted that it is right next to him. And he does not notice because he's busy laughing at Harry, who, because he's angrily looking at Malfoy, finally sees it.
Yeah.
In that moment, he stops to try and not make Malfoy aware, but he stops too long and gets hit by the bludger that he's had to keep moving to avoid. So that actually makes perfect sense.
And it shatters his arm.
He can feel it break.
Yeah. I have never broken a bone. It doesn't seem pleasant.
I have not either.
But I find it interesting that whenever people describe breaking a bone, whether it's in literature or just people talking about it, they seem to know that they have broken it. And a sick part of me wonders what that feels like. Like, how do you know that you broke it and not just like bashed it real bad?
Probably the level of pain. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who know that they've broken a bone, but haven't actually broken a bone, you know?
Maybe, yeah.
It might be, this is a lot of pain. This hurts so much more than I felt before. I've definitely broken this. And sometimes they're wrong.
I never want to know.
But you also want to know.
I want to know what that sensation is like.
Yeah.
Of like feeling a bone break. I don't like thinking about it.
That's something to look forward to, I guess.
Hopefully not. Hopefully
a mystery
no.
for the future.
But Harry does manage to catch the snitch, even with his right arm being broken. He catches it with his left hand, which I think he is right-handed. Yeah, when he gets the wand, Ollivander says that he's right-handed. Or Harry tells Ollivander.
So he charges at Malfoy to do it, grabs the snitch, and then I don't know
just
how
like
high
falls
up they
to
are,
the ground.
But he just falls, broom with him, crashes into the ground.
He
and
can't have been that high up because like it's still just his arm that's messed up.
Yeah, he doesn't break anything else.
Yeah.
And then come to save the day, he wakes up to gleaming teeth and Harry immediately knows it is Lockhart and says, please not him.
And I wonder what the circumstances were that led to Lockhart being the first like adult on the field.
You know that he pushed his way there. He might not have been the first one out of the stands, but he pushed children out of the way so that he could be the one to save Harry Potter.
And he does stop the pain in a way.
The bone is no longer broken, but it is also no longer there, along with all of the bones in his arm.
Yep. That is Lockhart's gift to Harry. And we should note, too, that this whole time, Colin is standing behind Lockhart snapping photos.
Yeah. A lot of photos of Harry with his broken arm would have been developed, and we would have seen a rubbery arm in motion, except for what happens later in this chapter, which we'll get to.
But would... is standing behind this crowd smiling.
They won. Doesn't matter what happens to Harry, they won.
And that's what matters.
And Harry's alive, so that's pretty good, too.
Yeah, it was a good day for my boyfriend, Oliver Wood.
So, yes, Harry multiple times tells Lockhart, please don't do this. And Lockhart does it anyway.
Yeah.
That's even with Wood saying he really should,
he should go to the hospital wing, yeah.
Harry also sees Fred and George still fighting the bludger.
Yeah, like trying to wrestle it into the box.
So it's not like the game is done, so
the bludger's off just... him. No, oh, it's still coming.
Yeah, it's still trying to bash him even while he was, I guess, unconscious on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But then we go to the hospital wing after with his nice new rubbery arm.
It doesn't seem pleasant. He doesn't seem happy about it.
He's not happy about it. He feels it deflate, and then he can't feel anything, and then he can't move anything.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Madame Pomfrey is in this chapter, though, and She has been in other chapters, but I don't know that we've ever, like, properly introduced her. Turns out there's not a lot to talk about with her.
I feel like we did, but keep going.
Maybe we did. Maybe I'm repeating herself. But as far as etymology, I'm going to read something from the Harry Potter lexicon. Madame Pomfrey's first name is Poppy, I should say. And the Harry Potter lexicon says that Poppy refers to the opium poppy used in healing. Pomfrey, on the other hand, refers to the medieval herb comfrey used to aid blood clotting and for expelling phlegm.
Cool.
Isn't that lovely?
Lovely, yeah.
Phlegm will come back in a big way in later books. But Madame Pomfrey, and I know we're not here to talk about the movies, Madame Pomfrey is played by the incomparable Gemma Jones, known best to me for playing Mrs. Dashwood in Sense and Sensibility in 1995, and Bridget's mom.
There's a reason these episodes are so long.
In Bridget Jones's Diary, which makes this the second episode in a row where I found a way to talk about Bridget Jones's Diary at the end. Such a good movie. It's so funny.
Well, so Madame Pomfrey is very upset
yeah.
that Harry didn't go straight to her. And Harry doesn't seem to try and defend himself, saying, I tried. I really did. His arm is rubber.
Give him a pass.
And he's very concerned about that. She goes on about how she could have just healed his bones in seconds. And now he has to stay overnight to have them painfully regrown.
Using Skelegrow.
Which is a great name.
And if you'll remember from a previous episode, Skelegrow was invented by Linfred of Stinchcombe, who is Harry's ancestor.
Yep.
So that's a fun little connection. Some trivia about Skelegrow. The name means skeleton grow.
Pretty straightforward.
But also, more interestingly, you can buy a pretty, like, sick, nasty replica of the Skelegrow bottle from the movies. That's like an actual water bottle you can drink out of.
Oh, okay.
It looks kind of cool. I found one up for auction on eBay with the title, in all caps, Official Harry Potter Skelegrow Wizarding World Water Drinks Potion Bottle. Which is just, I love eBay culture, how titles are in all caps and they just shove keywords in there. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, a little bit more about Skelegrow in a film specifically is some stuff on the bottle is very fun. It's the bone regenerator. It's the 1100 drops bone regenerator. Bonafide results every time. Bone is separate as they write that out.
That's a good joke.
Yeah. And then it says who made it, but bonafide is what matters.
Yeah. I like that. So Harry drinks the nasty potion. Everybody shows up to party with him and Madame Pomfrey tells them to leave because she hates fun.
Well, she lets them stay for a little bit and then shoos them away.
Yes. Yeah. She's like, he needs to sleep. He has bones to regrow.
Yeah.
Which, fair.
I believe she says 32.
33, I think.
33? Yeah. We can note right away.
Take bets, podcast listeners. Who's right?
33.
Oh, no. Was I the one that said 33? I forgot.
Yes, you did.
Okay, cool. yes. So Harry does go to sleep and he wakes up to somebody gingerly washclothing
sponging his face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He wakes up in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
He describes as splinters in his arm.
Sure. The bones like splintering back together.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
I can't remember the last time I had a splinter. I feel like I used to get splinters on a regular basis as a kid. And
I'm sure
now
you
I
were
never do.
Just like every other child, constantly outside barefoot.
No,
or like
I was never
touching
outside
wooden play
barefoot.
Structures.
I wasn't an animal.
Oh, I was all the time.
Oh, God.
I would get splinters on my feet from my deck or like from on my hands from play structures.
Well, our little like swing set in the backyard was metal and like old and rusty. So I probably got other kinds of ailments from that thing. But no, I have no idea where I got all those splinters.
Okay.
Yeah. His bones are splintering together. And he wakes up to find Dobby there tending to him. And Dobby reveals that it was him behind sealing the platform, and it was him that cursed the Bludger.
Yeah. It's basically everything bad that's happened so far to Harry specifically. There have been other bad things that have been happening, but to Harry specifically,
yeah,
has been Dobby's fault.
And Dobby explains that he only wants to do it. He's only been doing these things because he wants to protect Harry from the bad things happening at school related to the Chamber of Secrets. And so Harry like perks up. He's like, you know something about the Chamber of Secrets? Dobby doesn't really talk anymore about it. He's too busy like beating himself.
But also we learned that this was clearly premeditated because Dobby knew about this earlier. Dobby is saying this is what he planned to stop Harry from being involved with. So Dobby knew about the Chamber of Secrets being opened over the summer.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And Dobby also reveals some interesting things about house elves. The first of which is that the house elves seem to kind of revere Harry. That Dobby says, like, house elves, when Voldemort was around, were treated like trash. And I'm still treated like trash. But on the whole, things are a lot better for us since you defeated him.
Basically, Dobby's saying his life didn't change, but other elves' lives changed. And he appreciates Harry for that.
Yes, which is interesting in and of itself. But I also think it's interesting to think about this like community of house elves that seemingly exists, that like Dobby knows the situation of other house elves.
Yeah, I wonder what the communication system like is like for house elves, which are essentially slaves, which can only be released, we find out, by giving someone clothes, giving the elf clothes. He says even a sock would set him free.
Socks show up a lot in these books.
Yes, Dumbledore loves socks. Dobby can't be given a sock. House elves can't do laundry.
Okay, so I knew you were going to say this. I knew it, and people have been bringing this up for years about the Harry Potter books. It's not true. There are later references in the books to house elves doing laundry. And the loophole that people have kind of worked out for themselves, as far as I know, Rowling has never directly commented on this, is that the house elf needs to be presented with something in terms of a transfer of ownership, given something and implied that they're not going to get it back. So like when you throw your laundry in the laundry basket, you're not giving it to me. You're temporarily lending it to me to go to the laundromat and wash for 2 hours every 2 weeks. However, if you were to, say, take a dirty sock off your foot and say, Cassie, I'm so grateful for all that you do going to the laundromat every 2 weeks and washing all my clothes. I want you to have this. That would be different. And that's the way I think people have kind of sussed that out for themselves.
Okay.
Which, sure.
Sure. Why not?
And to give a little background on this, I wanted to know where, like, if Rowling was just being funny with choosing house elves being given clothes as, like, the means of liberation. So I came across something on the Harry Potter lexicon that we apparently totally missed when we first discussed Dobby. And I say we, but I mean I made a mistake. I'm going to read directly from the Harry Potter lexicon, which most of this quote is just them quoting Wikipedia directly. House elves are derived from creatures called brownies or hobs in folklore. And this is the part from Wikipedia. A hob is a type of small mythological household spirit found in the North and Midlands of England, but especially on the Anglo-Scottish border, according to traditional folklore of those regions. They can live inside the house or outdoors. They are said to work in farmyards and thus could be helpful. However, if offended, they could become nuisances. The usual way to dispose of a hob was to give them a set of new clothing, the receiving of which would make the creature leave forever. It could, however, be impossible to get rid of the worst hobs. So for all of that talking and thinking I did about how Dobby is a reference to Robin Goodfellow and all of this nonsense, there was a very easy explanation here. And also, there's a book called Brownies and Boggles. Boggles? Maybe Boggles. Boggle is a game. This is spelled differently. Brownies and Boggles by Louise Imogen Guiney from 1888. And she writes about hobs, which are also called dobbies.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
She writes, fine clothes were quite to his mind. He was very vain when he had them, and it was what Pet Marjorie called majestic pride, and no whim of anger or sensitiveness, which sent him hurrying off the moment his wardrobe was supplied by some grateful housekeeper to eschew work forever after and set himself up as a gentleman of leisure. Many funny stories are told of his behavior under an unexpected shower of dry goods. Brownie, who in his humble station was so steadfast and sensible, had his poor head completely turned by the vision of a new bright colored jacket. And this is another odd part of it. It continues. The gentle little pixies, or pixies of Devonshire, who are of the brownie race and very different from the malicious pixies in Cornwall, were likewise great dandies and sure to decamp as soon as they ever obtained a fresh cap or petticoat. Pixies in Cornwall. These are the Cornish pixies. Cornish pixies are from Cornwall. I couldn't believe that in this like one paragraph, we somehow missed the references to these two folklore creatures in the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
Just wild to me that never turned up in my research.
What made you find this one? Or what made you find it this time?
So I went to the Harry Potter lexicon page on house elves and found that thing about brownies or hobs, which they took from Wikipedia. And then I think I went to the Wikipedia page, which had a thing that said that they were sometimes called dobbies. And I was like, what? And I wanted to know also where Wikipedia was sourcing that information from, that like, you know, anybody can go on Wikipedia and say like, usually they were set free by clothes and that could come from anywhere. So I wanted to see like the original source. And so I found that book, Brownies and Boggles, and it is in the public domain. So I was able to find it on Project Gutenberg. So I control F'd in there for like clothes. And that's how I came across it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was quite a process. But yeah, I just couldn't believe that the two were in there. I wonder if Rowling owns this book.
I don't know.
But I also liked the idea that Cornish pixies and house elves are related in some way.
Yeah.
They look similar in the movies. They've got big ears. They've got
big ears,
eyes.
I guess.
One is blue. But yeah.
Okay. They both found ways to cause Harry Potter trouble.
Yep. So that's the sane explanation for Dobby. Not that he is a reference to Puck from A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is the argument I made.
I don't even remember us recording.
Okay. I'm so glad that
the second chapter
listened to things that I say. Yes, that was the second chapter.
I don't remember.
It was a long time ago.
I don't remember
what
I said. It was like
probably 8 months ago at this point. but yeah, so Harry and Dobby have this little exchange and they hear some footsteps coming, which makes Dobby disappear.
Yes,
with a loud crack.
At this point, Dobby, Harry was holding out Dobby's hand, and Dobby is able to disappear. And while Harry was holding on to him, and Harry was holding on to nothing after that, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Something to highlight for 8 years from now.
Yeah. God.
Stick that in your notes.
Yeah. Yeah, so they hear the footsteps coming, and it turns out to be the professors carrying the petrified Colin Creevy into the hospital wing, and he's got his camera held up to his eye.
Yes, and they say that he was found with a bunch of grapes.
Yeah.
And they theorize that Colin was coming to visit Harry.
And bring him some
and
nice
bring
grapes.
Him some grapes. Some loose grapes. Like, obviously yeah. on the vine, probably. But, like, he didn't have a bowl or a
No,
plate.
I like to think that he just had, like, a bunch of loose grapes, like, in his pocket from dinner. Not on a vine.
Not on a vine. Just, like, loose.
Yeah.
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 But, so he has a camera in his hand. We now know exactly what was terrorizing the school. Exactly what attacked him. That's at least what Dumbledore hopes. And he opens it up to find the film was melted. And thankfully for Harry, at least, that probably included all the film of Harry and his rubber arm.
Yeah. And it seems like it's McGonagall, Dumbledore, and Madame Pomfrey dealing with this right now.
Yes.
And they have an interesting conversation. I'm gonna read it because I want to talk about it. What does this mean, Albus? Professor McGonagall asked urgently. "It means," said Dumbledore, "that the Chamber of Secrets is indeed open again." Madame Pomfrey clapped a hand to her mouth. Professor McGonagall stared at Dumbledore. "But Albus, surely, who?" "The question is not who," said Dumbledore, his eyes on Colin. "The question is how." And there's a lot buried in here.
Well, Dobby lets slip that history is repeating itself.
Yes, that the Chamber of Secrets has been opened before.
Yes.
So we get that confirmation from Dobby, but we also get it from Dumbledore, which is not to say that I doubted Dobby before, but this gives it...
reinforces it.
Yeah, yeah, even more that Dumbledore also is confirming that this has happened before. And that was conveniently left out of Professor Binns's little summary of the Chamber of Secrets.
Which was Professor Binns... just focused on teaching that. There's a chance Professor Binns was just going back and forth from wherever he sleeps to the lecture hall and back and never noticed the Chamber of Secrets opened.
Or
chose to leave it out. But he got very defensive about these are the facts and those are not facts.
Right. That it has been suggested that it was open before, but Professor Binns, for some reason, does not believe it's credible. Dumbledore clearly does.
Yes.
Also, Dumbledore seems to know who opened the Chamber of Secrets.
It seems like this.
He says the question is not
who, but how.
Right.
The way he says it, it almost seems like not that it could have been anyone. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a interesting thing to think about. It definitely raises questions, which we cannot answer. In this chapter, in this book, a little bit in this book.
Yes, in this book.
I thought this was very interesting and very well done with the hindsight that I now have as somebody who has read the entire series. And I hope that our listeners who somehow are reading the books chapter by chapter with us.
I'm sure it's happening.
Yeah. Yep. I hope that they will one day have that illuminated for them. But everybody else in the world who has read these books or at least seen the movies or something knows what I'm talking about. And that's kind of where we'll leave it for this chapter, except for Spell of the Week. What's that spell?
The spell is the potentially bone fixing charm. It is Brachium Emendo. This is in the film. We don't get an incantation in the book, but in the film, this is what Lockhart uses to not heal Harry, but it's what he tries to use to heal Harry. And he does so with confidence, which makes me believe at the very least he thought it was going to work. So we don't know for sure if this is the actual incantation, but we do know that it's possible to do an incantation correctly and still have something go horribly wrong. The wand movement is important, and the slightest thing in a complicated spell could have some poor side effects. So if we're following this as, yeah, that spell would have worked, let's look into a little bit of what it should have done and where the name comes from. So it should have not just healed his bones, but brachium is derived from Latin brachium, meaning forearm or arm.
Okay.
And emendo is Latin for mend or fix. So it would have been mend the forearm or fix his arm.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't, like if you use this on his leg, I don't know if that would have done what it needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the spell. This spell potentially would have just been to fix whatever is wrong with the arm. Obviously, the first time we see it is in the Chamber of Secrets. But again, we don't know the exact incantation in the book. We only get one in the movie.
And it should be noted that according to the lexicon, in some video game versions of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Lockhart instead says osseo dispersimus, which means bones scatter in Latin. So that kind of changes the scene that, like, Joe, I think, is making the argument that maybe this was the right spell and Lockhart messed up. The other version is him using the exact wrong spell.
Yeah. And can I ask what game that was?
It's never clear. Nobody ever cites the actual game.
You're on the lexicon?
Yeah, they write CS/G, which CS/F on the lexicon is Chamber of Secrets film. CS/G is game.
Okay. Well, just based on the different years that the games came out, because there are movie games and then there are book games for the Chamber of Secrets. There are some that came out after the movie came out. And there are some that came out after the book came out. That's why you have...
No.
Yeah?
No.
You sure?
I'm 100% sure. Joe, I played these games. I was in it. I was in it deep. The games were developed concurrently with the movies. The level of, like, insight and contact that the game developers had with the movie crew and Rowling is not clear. But they were all developed at the same time with the intent of releasing them around the release of the movie, because that's when the like maximum interest would be.
So essentially one of the games just made up an incantation the same way essentially the movie made up an incantation.
Yeah.
But that information went to some games and not all games.
Yes. And the movies had more input from Rowling.
Yeah.
The games don't Did seem not. So. Yeah. I guess we'll just have to play all the Chamber of Secrets games to find out.
All of them. Yep.
Starting with the best. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets on the Game Boy Color.
So that was Spell of the Week. And I don't know, you usually do the outro. Do you want me to do the outro?
I'd really love to hear you try to do the outro.
So that was Spell of the Week. Please like and subscribe.
No.
So that was Spell of the Week. If you want to write us an email, you can do so at owlpost@podtriviatotalis.com. That is owlpost@podtriviatotalis.com.
I don't really spell it anymore.
Well, I did, so... If you'd like to, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Is that what that's called?
That's a place to leave
Podchaser. I don't know if that thing is still going on with the 25 cents.
It has actually. So the thing with the 25 cents, Podchaser.com is graciously donating 25 cents to Meals on Wheels's COVID-19 relief fund. For every review left on their website, it can be a review for the entire podcast. It can be a review for the individual episode. So if you were like, I love the Death Day Party episode of Podtrivicus Totalis, you can go online and leave us a review that says that. And then you can go online and say, Rogue Bludger, not as good. If you want to do that, you can, and you will have donated. Well, Podchaser will do it, but on your behalf, Podchaser will have donated 50 cents to COVID-19, to Meals on Wheels' COVID-19 relief fund. And if we reply to the review, which I promise I will reply to every review, they will donate another 25 cents. Now, Joe is right that there is a limited time for this, but today it was extended through all of April. So you still have time. This episode should come out within the month of April, I think. if my math is correct, which it rarely is, you should still have time to do this. So please do leave us a review on podchaser.com, whether it's for the show or for individual episodes, as it does a lot of good for the world. And what is Harry Potter about if not doing good for the world? yeah, please continue with the outro now, Joe.
Yeah, so if it's after April and that thing's no longer happening,
you can still leave us a review.
Feel no pressure to leave us a review.
But it would put a smile on my little face.
You're more than welcome to. it does not affect me personally.
I would tell you about them. Okay. You don't let me read the reviews on the podcast. You yelled at me when I tried
weird. That'd be very weird.
I think you're like, nice.
And this person liked this episode, and this person did not like this episode.
We don't have any bad reviews.
yeah, but do we have reviews?
We have 6 reviews on Apple Podcasts.
How many of them are your sister?
None of the written reviews are my sister, I don't think. But our last review was in July of last year, so I would really just light up my day. to get a nice little review.
What else do we say for our outro?
We. Implying this is a team effort.
This is a team effort, but you are the captain and you do most of the work. Mm-hmm. I'm just part of the team.
I would say 99%.
I'd be a good ball boy or water boy.
Is that a position? Ball boy?
It's not a position on a team. It's just like a assistant.
You've played sports. I haven't.
We talked about this when you were watching the tennis video game where the guys that just like kept squatting back down.
Yep.
Yeah. Ball boy runs against the balls.
Okay. Against the balls.
Against the balls. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
What else?
How much of this are you going to leave in?
All of it.
Okay. I'm so sorry for how long this is. What's next? You can follow us on Twitter. That's at Potrificus, because Potrificus Totalis was too long.
Yep.
I don't think we have an Instagram.
No. Well,
we might have a Facebook.
We do have a Facebook.
We also have a Tumblr, but I have an open Tumblr in forever.
Nobody's open Tumblr.
Well, like, you know, I opened it to make the page, but then...
You didn't make the page.
I didn't make the page?
No.
I have contributed the most to it, but there's also nothing on it.
Yeah, I guess we have a Tumblr. Don't follow us on Tumblr. We do have a Facebook page. I have thought about starting an Instagram because other podcasts do have Instagram and they post these nice pictures of them in the recording studio or like of related stuff. But you don't want to see us here. You don't want to see us in our PJs sitting in our spare bedroom talking about Harry Potter. It's a mess in here. There's some slices of bread on the bed, just sitting.
They're in a bag. They're in the bread loaf bag.
My point is, we would not be creating content conducive to Instagram, I don't think. But hey, if you would like...
We are an audio media for a reason.
Yeah. Well, I've got a face for radio. Joe...
I am beautiful, but I prefer to stay behind the microphone and not the screen.
Yeah, so we don't have an Instagram, but if it would really, really kick your jollies for us to make one,
leave us a review on Podchaser. but only if it's during April. After that, we're not making it.
No, you can still like email me or something. Notice how I say also email me, not email the podcast. This is too long. You need to wrap this outro out.
You keep stretching this out. And that's all for that. Mm-hmm. What did I forget?
You did review.
Yep.
You did email.
Yep.
What else do you do with podcasts?
Goodbye.
No.
I don't know.
You hit the subscribe button.
No.
Yeah.
I'm never going to say that.
You don't have to say it in those words.
If you liked listening to us, keep doing that.
By hitting the subscribe button in your podcast app of choice.
And join us next week.
Still forgetting something.
I don't care at this
point. You can go to our website for detailed show notes. And to listen to all our episodes. And you can join us next week for Chapter 11,
The Dueling Club.